The Bane Free Radio Hour.
So, like your elevator speech for the book, for the uninitiated and from people that haven't read your old stuff, how would you describe the book to get people to read it?
It's Hammer Slammers meets the Odyssey.
Okay.
With a tank.
With a tank. Okay. And so I'm trying to think of the any of the additional characters. The one thing I really liked about the book, one with the technology, with the movement assisted technology. I mean, we're kind of starting to see that today, nowadays. You know, they're developing stuff like that to where, you know, you can move faster or at least be stronger and stuff like that. So it's relatable, and you can you could see that happening in the future, to where we would be using that in our military, because it would be further along. I like the fact that you didn't use too much AI, because everybody's using AI these days, and mm-hmm. So that was kind of refreshing. So I enjoyed that. And especially like the later character, the tank character that we were talking about. I like how you do that. It's they were very confused by the other people, and I really enjoyed that. You know, plus the shower scene. that was good stuff. So let's talk about you. Let's former military. How did you become a writer?
How did we become a writer? It's like, you know, like most people, kind of by accident. Mm-hmm. I had written, the first thing I wrote was a play for something in high school. Mm-hmm. And then I'd written some scenes for where I went to the United States Military Academy at West Point, and they have every year the senior class puts on a show called the 100th Night Show, where mm-hmm. they essentially just lampoon their 4 years at West Point. And for my senior year, I wrote a couple scenes for our show, and you know those got some good laughs. So I was pretty happy with that. And then as I was home on my first tour, and I was watching the History Channel with my brother back when they had history on it instead of aliens, mm-hmm. and the Red Baron, there Doug, we watched a short documentary about the Red Baron, and he looks at me and says, "You know, there's never been a movie about the Red Baron." And actually, there had been one by Roger Corman, but. And I was like, yeah, you know, there hasn't been. We should write one. So he and I agreed to write a script, and I did everything. He lost interest pretty quick, but I mm-hmm. learned how to write a screenplay after researching the Red Baron and getting to know you know, who he was. And so I wrote the script, and the script that I wrote and did pretty kind of well in a bunch of contests. And then I quickly realized that, wow, writing screenplays it's almost impossible to make money unless, you know, your cousin is a producer or something like that.
Right.
So, and then I was back in the States, and I was working at the Joint IED Defeat Organization, and I came across I came across a blog from someone who had figured out how to make independent publishing work. And this is back in 2009, mm-hmm. when the Kindle was first finally starting to get some legs under it. So I saw that, and I'm like, huh, well, this guy can do it. I can write a novel. And then I proceeded to write a book called Into Darkness, which was a fictionalized, very fictionalized take on my second tour mm-hmm. in Iraq. And so I had written that, and that was like 80,000 words, and wrote two more books in the same series. None of it sold well at all. And I was like, oh, this doesn't work. And then I thankfully had someone named Russell Blake, who writes, who does a lot of independent publishing. And I was talking to him, Nathan, he said, "Do you ever want to write something else?" And I'm like, well, I've loved Star Wars since before I could walk. Maybe I should write something kind of military space opera-ish. And then I wrote The Ember War, which took off and mm-hmm. has sold well ever since. And gave me a career as a writer. And now I think I'm about book 70 something into my career.
Wait, so when did you start that?
The Amber War, I think, came out in 2015.
Okay.
Yeah, the Amber War came out in 2015, and that sold well enough for me to, when the day job ended, I was on a contract as an analyst. Mm-hmm. When the day job ended, it was like, well, I'm making more writing books, so I'll just keep doing this.
That's awesome.
Knock on wood, it's still working. So.
And that's self-published?
The Amber War is, yes.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. Yeah. That's awesome. Wait, 70 books in. What is your writing schedule?
It's when the boys are at school, mm-hmm. by and large. And so I can get in about a good 5 to 6 hours of work every day. And then it's dad time for three boys.
Yeah.
But I outline extensively. Mm-hmm. And then when it's time to write, I can probably put out about 5 to 6 thousand words a day. So once the outline is done, then I consider my outline my first draft. Then the second outline, which is, puts in more detail. That's my second draft. And then my third draft is the first full on manuscript. And that's what, I'll clean that up and then send that off to the editor.
So, how many books are, even though that's almost 10 years, how many books are you putting out a year?
It's normally about 5 or 6. My normal length for my independent books between 60 to 75,000 words.
Okay.
And I know most traditionally published books tend to be in the 100,000, 150,000 word mm-hmm. range. So when I'm writing for Bain or someone else, they'll say, we need it longer. I'm like, okay, fine, you'll get it longer. But mm-hmm. when I'm writing just my stuff, for whatever reason, my sweet spot is between 60 and 75,000 words. That's ends up being right where I can get the story out.
Yeah. So, I know that I'm going against most readers. I'm a very slow reader. So I appreciate a short book. and especially one like the one we're talking about today, Breton, where it's like you said, it's shorter than some of the other Bain books, but man, a lot happens, so it moves along fast. But the only problem is when I'm done, I want more. I want the next one. And so now knowing that you have a 70 book series, everyone, please to enjoy. Go have fun. Go nuts.
Yeah. That is nice. It's like somebody gets done with one series. They go, I like what Richard, I like, how I write. And mm-hmm. then go look, oh, look, here's this, there's like three other series they can start.
Yeah.
And then, it's I like to think of myself as as an author, amusement park sometimes. Come on in to the Richard Fox, mm-hmm. auditorium. Go on the Amber War roller coaster. Whee! Then they come out. How would you like to go on the tier log ride? And then go on the log ride and they come back, So I just like to think people come in and like, oh, go on this adventure. You're done with that one. Go on that one. And then stay here and leave a review, please. And
everything. Yeah. So, no, because I can appreciate that. Because one thing, especially when you get into some of the more like epic fantasies and things like that, man, I need a chart. I need a spreadsheet mm-hmm. and all that. Keep track of that stuff. No, not knocking that. Those are very entertaining books. But sometimes I just want something fast and fun and, something fun to read. So that's if that's your wheelhouse, this is a great book for it. Because like I said, it's not as long as, some of the other Bain books, but man, a lot of stuff goes on.
Yeah. I hear that a lot. So, and I'm okay with hearing that a lot from mm-hmm. different people. Like that's not bad.
No,
read Richard Fox. It goes fast and it's fun. You're like, okay. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's just what people want.
Yep. Yep. So, speaking of, hopes and dreams for this, because this is number one in the series. I'm hoping it's a series. Mm-hmm. What hopes and dreams? What are you going to try and do with this?
I already know the last half of the last book is already kind of written up in here. I know how it ends.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it just the question is, okay, how much has to happen along the way? I think this could be a 4 or 5 books, probably mm-hmm. 6. So I know what happens in the second book. I just need the green light to get going on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's but yeah, this is about 6 book series. Awesome. And the end, you know, the end that I know it's going to be very satisfying. I think some people will be sad, but you know, you can't always get, not everything can be happy. So
yeah. So is this your first solo with Bane, or have you had
I had previously written Light of the Veil. Uh-huh. with Bane, which is a space adventure series that has a very kind of classical sort of structure to it. Mm-hmm. And that came out January of this year.
Okay. And this is out now.
Men of Breton will be out on November 5th on Election Day. So, you know, no matter what your politics, you could get something you really want.
Yes.
So there's a lot of people who are going to be like, don't tell me the news. I got to find out what happens to these Men of Breton here.
Yes, exactly. Go vote and then buy a book afterwards.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so you're hoping, you know, so what else can, you've already got, your personally published books, you've got your series with Bane. What can we expect from you coming out into the future?
I am finishing, I'm writing my last Ember War subseries. And that is called the Terran Expeditionary Force. I'm working on book 3. It's going to be 5 books for that. And then after that, I have 3 or 4 really good ideas. Mm-hmm. for series. And I got to figure out which one I want to do next.
So, these are going to be self-published or?
Probably self-published. Okay. I'm playing footsie with a couple other publishers, but we'll see. So.
All right. Well, that's awesome because the self-publishing game, like you said, it's blowing up, and I like to see when people are successful with it. And I got to get my wife into it. We're gonna see what we can do. Military science fiction, is that like your favorite thing to write, or because of your experiences, or do you dabble into other genres?
I wrote a book called The Queen of Sidonia, which is, it's a, what's the term? A clean romance set in a sci-fi sci-fi setting. Mm-hmm. And that book, it's close to my heart. It's a sweet story, not sweet story, but rather it's a story of a bodyguard and who's charged with keeping, you know, this one princess alive. Mm-hmm. While a whole bunch of other assassins are after her to stop a future wedding. And you know, that book was a lot of fun, but you know, I'm not a romance writer. Mm-hmm. And for me, I've loved Star Wars since before I could work or I could walk. Mm-hmm. I love Warhammer 40,000.
Mm-hmm.
Way more than I should. I have so many models that I haven't painted yet, and many more on my desk just staring at me waiting, you know, like, when are we going to be finished? Quiet, brother, battle brother, you know. But you know, it's for military sci-fi and the more grimdark. I really like that. I have one amazing fantasy novel in mm-hmm. mind, but I'm not sure when I could get that out. And then also I have to go to my audience and say, I know you all love the military sci-fi, but how about dragons?
Yeah.
And this actually won't be too hard of a sell, I don't think, because dragons are awesome, and who doesn't love, you know, books about dragons? So I have that in mind, and then I have one of my better ideas is a game-lit light sort of series where it's about, you know, gamers who also, you know, there's a military aspect to it. I don't want to flesh it out too much, but mm-hmm. so like, you know, kind of a game lit idea that mm-hmm. I think I would have to, you know, just change around a little bit so that the game lit or the lit RPG audience goes, yes, that sounds like something we want.
Please.
If you put something out there, it's like, this sounds like 5 different genres. People are going to be like, I don't like 4 of those. I'm not going to read it. Yeah.
Well, speaking of Warhammer, they're supposed to be coming out with a movie soonish or in the next couple of years.
We'll see. There's the deal that Amazon and Games Workshop has
uh-huh.
with Henry Cavill attached is expires by the end of this year. If they don't come up with something. So I know there is a short film coming up through Amazon where they had like a bunch of gaming properties, and then they make short films into it, which mm-hmm. is a really good way to do like light pilots. Mm-hmm. So if they pull this out and like, wow, this Space Marine one does great, then they'll option more Space Marine, you mm-hmm. know, content. But there's also a game called Conquered, which has crashed and burned, costing Sony upwards of, I think, $200 million at least.
Wow.
And they have a video or a short film in this anthology that Amazon's putting out. And I thought, man, wouldn't that be just awful yet awesome if that's the best one? And then Amazon says, we want more of Conquered. And Sony's like, really? That's the one you want? I got good news and bad news. Yeah. There's no more game, but if you want to pay money for the license, go ahead.
Yeah.
You got to make up our money somehow.
So. Well, it's like Vox Machina that's out right now, you know, based off of a podcast, based off of Dungeons and Dragons campaign, and it's doing well. So, no, that's cool. So, as far as your works and your series, where besides Amazon, where can they find you? Where can they find your books?
Yeah, everything I write is on Amazon, with the exception of a couple short stories that Bain's hosting.
Mm-hmm.
And then Audible, you know, if put my name in Audible, Luke Daniels narrates all of my Ember War books.
Oh, awesome.
And, Bob Bray did two out of my three of my tier books, and he was narrating that series, and his health, caused him to drop off. But I still have not listened to his Starship Troopers, though. I'm anxious to, because I had bought it years and years ago, mm-hmm. and it just never came out, but now it's out. So I'm like, okay, now I can finally get my, you know, Starship Troopers, which is my, I think I've read Starship Troopers more than any other book in my entire life. So I'm anxious for that listen. But yeah, Audible and Amazon is where everything I have is.
And you're speaking my language now, because I'm an audiophile. I'd rather listen to a book than read it. I know that's sacrilege to you reader folks out there. Sorry about that. But I'm just such a slow reader. Plus, I like, you know, the production and all that. And nothing bothers me more than a low production, or like the AI reads
mm-hmm.
on these things. Oh, they're bad.
Yeah,
doesn't sell the book at all.
Yeah, all my stuff is, you know, narrators, and the other book that's attached to Men of Breton, Hell's Horizon, was mm-hmm. narrated by Giancarlo Esposito, who he played Gus Fring in Breaking Bad, and mm-hmm. he's also Grand Moff. I forgot he's also the main bad guy in the first two seasons of Mandalorian.
Yeah. I like it.
And he also has a role in the upcoming Captain America movie. So I had Giancarlo Esposito. He was one of the narrators for that. The other one was Eric Dane, who was the captain of the last ship on the series, the last ship. But mm-hmm. for any ladies out there, Eric Dane, he's McSteamy. So
that, how are you getting these guys?
It was pure luck, because when the producer was looking for narrators, COVID had just hit
mm-hmm.
and every actor was out of work.
Mm.
So they went to the big dog talent agencies and said, hey, we got a way for your clients to make money, and they don't have to be on set anywhere. So they said, okay, yeah, get Giancarlo Esposito and Eric Dane to narrate it.
Better lucky than good.
yeah. And so Giancarlo Esposito performed one of my better dick and fart jokes that I've ever written. So just to hear that, like, oh, here's Gus Fring talking about a really awkward situation. So, but both narrators did really great. And that was a little surreal having that happen, but I was like, I wasn't complaining.
That's pretty cool, man. That's a good story. Yeah. You ever narrate any of your own books?
No, I firmly believe no one will pay to hear this voice, because I'm like a lot of people. Whenever I hear my own voice anywhere, I'm like, that's enough.
Yeah, because you gotta edit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't think I'd ever narrate my own stuff.
Okay. No, that's cool, man. It's I guess if anything good can come out of the pandemic, you know, it's getting quality narration.
Yeah.
So where can people find you, you know, online and all that, if they want to bug you?
Go to Richard Fox Author for my author page. And there's all kinds of books and links there. You know, Facebook, just put in Richard Fox Author. It'll take you right to my one page where I put out cover reveals, minor jokes that I will find funny along the way, and all news about my books typically goes to Facebook first. And then on Amazon, you just put in Richard Fox and you'll find me there. And that's really the best ways to find me.
Speaking of jokes, do you try to put humor into all of your books, some of your books?
Yeah, I find that there's times when humor, the jokes kind of arise organically.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I'm in a situation where, like, you know, like I had one book where they said we're going on a shuttle and it's got stealth technology. Mm-hmm. So they get their younger, more naive soldier, and they tell him, hey, you got to go find the stealth ship. It's on the flight deck somewhere. So he's walking around out there, just kind of like he thinks it's invisible. And so all the other characters are just sitting there watching and they're filming it. And like, I didn't plan that, but when it just kind of like happens naturally, it's like, okay, I can do that. And then with Men of Breton, you know, I had this part where, okay, I know I've got this kind of a lull between when they get on the ship and the ship gets to somewhere and this other action beat happens. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, what's going to happen here? What are soldiers going to do? And I'm like, well, they're going to eat chow and to have a shower. And I, hold on. And then, so I don't ever like set out to like, I have to tell a disc joke here, but rather I'll be at the outline point and I'm like, you know what would be funny is if this happened. And I'm like, oh, I'm the writer. I can do that. Okay. So, and so that's ended up.
Yeah. You got to listen to the voices in your head sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And almost all the jokes I put in, they just kind of like arise naturally from the situation. So,
I enjoyed the jokes in this. The action was real good. And like I said before, you did a good job of making me care about the characters and what happened to them. So, folks, if you're looking for a good heart racing read, but you know, you're also going to have some fun, this is a great book. I highly recommend it. I can't wait for the next one to come out. And I say this every episode, but it's very important. Go like, rate, review wherever you find their books. Go on their website, join their your favorite author's newsletter if they have one. That's the best way to get news, because if you're just trying to find stuff on one of the apps, you're going to miss something that's this way. If you like their stuff and you can't wait to learn about their new stuff, that's a great way to do it.
Yeah. And I've noticed that whenever I get reviews, it tends to make me write faster. Scientists are baffled. So
there you go.
Intent.
Yeah. So where can people find you out in the wild?
I live in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And there's... So if anyone's ever in Vegas and they, you know, they tell me, yeah, I'm over here. I'm like, I could probably make time to go out, because everyone loves coming to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
You don't ever hear anyone go, oh no, I have to go to Vegas. My arm. No. And people just love coming here. So, yeah. But yeah, I live in Vegas and I typically just stay around here.
Okay. No conventions or anything?
There's the Author Nation that's coming up next month.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to Dragon Con when I was nominated for the award. Mm-hmm. I really need to go to Liberty Con. Because
it's fun time.
Everyone loves it. I know all the really quality people go there, and so I probably should go to LibertyCon. I'll look into going to there for next year. But I've also heard getting a badge is difficult, but that's okay.
They sell quickly. Yes,
they do.
It's
sell
a quickly. Small con. Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you can get in, it's worth the trip. It's fun. Little toasty, but other than that, it's good stuff. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show today. This was great. I'm glad to talk to you one-on-one. I might as well talk about your co-writing projects before we leave.
Yeah, David Weber and I have the Ascent to Empire series, which is a prequel series to his In Fury Born, I think it's duology of books. And this is of how Terrence Murphy goes from being, you know, a relatively well-connected person within the larger ruling class of the Terran Republic to the Emperor, and how, you know, he gets from there to there. And we got two books are done. Third book is outlined, and I got to talk with David about when we're going to start that. But that should be at least five, probably six books as well.
Oh, wow. Man, you are busy.
Yeah, yeah. And I love working with David. He is so smart. And yeah. he has forgotten more about how to write things than I have ever learned. And so it's always nice to, like, you know, we'll be going through the outline. Like, I have, you know, then I'll have some crazy little off-the-wall idea. And he'll listen to it. And sometimes he's like, okay, yeah, we can do that. And other times he's like, that's a bit much, Richard. Let's step back. I'm like, okay.
We'll step back. Pump your brakes.
yeah. But he let me go a little crazy with one character in the second book in the series, Rebel, that came out. He let me go a little wild with the Alimo character, and that was a lot of fun. So if you've read that book and you're hearing that, you might be like, damn, Richard, really? You may need to talk to somebody, because that character was not a good guy. But he's fun to write.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember talking to you guys about him. Yeah, he's a very bad guy.
Yeah, he's modeled off some very bad people I met in Iraq.
Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, now and whoever's watching this in the future, go check out Men of Breton. Go check out Richard's other work. Like, rate, review, all that good stuff. And sir, please keep doing what you're doing. You're doing a good job. Until next time, thank you everybody for watching, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Bye. Take care, everyone.
And now we bring you our audiobook serialization of Tinker by Wynn Spencer. Inventor girl genius Tinker lives in a near future Pittsburgh, which now exists mostly in the land of the elves. She runs her salvage business, pays her taxes, and tries to keep the local ambient level of magic down with gadgets of her own design. When a pack of wargs chase an elven noble into her scrapyard, life as she knows it takes a serious detour. Tinker finds herself taking on the Elven Court, the NSA, the Elven Interdimensional Agency, technology smugglers, and a college-minded xenobiologist as she tries to stay focused on what's really important, her first date. Armed with an intelligence the size of a planet, steel-toed boots, and a junkyard dog attitude, Tinker is ready to kick butt to get her first kiss.
Chapter 16 Endgame. Tinker was sick of keeping Chiyo out of her head. Working on the various mathematical and mechanical problems of the gate had provided automatic protection for the first 2 weeks. But the last few days, as much of the work resolved down to grunt work, little fiddles, and small fixes, she had to switch to solving random math problems. More annoying was that she hadn't been able to share with Pony anything she didn't want Chiyo to pick out of his head. The level of trust that her bodyguard had in her was unnerving. If their places were swapped, she'd be climbing the wall to know the plan. Pony, however, seemed content to wait and see what she pulled out of the hat. The first step of the plan was simply to finish early. Tom-Tom would be on hand during the 21st day, so she slaved everyone unmercifully to hit the 20th. Stunningly, they actually managed to finish early in the morning. But she dawdled, going so far as creating minor glitches. She wanted the cover of night, and confusion on both ends of the gate, when they activated it. But what if it didn't work? She tried to ignore that worry. Dusk grayed the sky as the dinner bowls arrived. As usual, afterward it fell to Chiyo to clear the dishes. Sexism. Gotta love it sometimes. Tinker gave Riki the chore to start moving the heavier tools and equipment to the second gate site. For a few spare seconds, she and Pony were alone with a handful of guards that didn't speak Elvish. "I've finished the gate, and I think it works," she murmured to Pony. "We'll see in a few minutes. I kept my promise. We go as soon as I turn it on and we can slip away." "The other gate?" He nodded his head in the direction of the second gate, currently being wired without her guidance. If we don't get away, it's what will keep us alive, but not intact. She shoved the thought away and pulled him over to the rack that used to hold the wiring spools. These. She twisted and pulled the middle pull far enough out to show that it wasn't attached. They're a weapon for you. It's the best I could do. The poles lacked the magically sharp edge of the Sakasha's ironwood swords, but they matched the blades in size and probably weight. Pony's eyes widened at the long, stout poles of ironwood. They will do nicely. Very clever. We'll see how clever I really am. With her stomach squirming like a nest of snakes, she walked to the huge red-painted switch and threw it. It started the sound and light show on the gate, drawing the guard's eyes while she moved back and kicked the secret power switch on. If she was right, the gate would exist between both dimensions while operating, and thus be impossible to damage. Hopefully, no one would discover how to turn off the power until too late. Oh, merciful gods in heaven and the five spirits of the world, let this work. The air around the gate shimmered and distorted, a massive confusion of particles as space was folded. Almost immediately, she could feel the feedback pulses, but still so slight that she hoped no one would be able to notice them. Visibly, the area through the center of the ring looked no different, just oddly distorted, like water over glass, with the back of the workshop still discernible. No wonder natural gates were so hard to find. One might think the gate wasn't working, except the entire structure, including the ironwood framework but luckily not the ramp, had also phased out, becoming ghost-like. The sudden blaze of lights brought Riki and the guards with him back.
You turned it on? Riki cried.
It's the only way to see if it works. Tinker stood with her hand on the big red button, hoping to implant the wrong impression in the Tengu's mind.
Does it work?
Riki peered at the shimmering area inside the gate, keeping well back of it. I merely build these things. I don't test them. Tinker raised her hands, warding off any attempt to send her through. That would totally mess up her plans. But it looks like it works to me. Why don't you get one of the guards to test it? That triggered the debate she hoped for. Trying to be all so unnoticeable, she walked back to the wire rack, took down the dinner plate-sized spool of lead wire, and pulled free the pole. That she handed Pony and removed another for herself. Us? Just moving wire. Nothing to see here. The smallest of the construction workers was drafted to be first through the gate. Every eye was on him as he crept nervously up the ramp. The poor thing was trembling violently as he scanned the entire gate, arching around him. The others shouted at him in Oni, encouragements, commands, and curses. As the Oni stepped forward, vanishing into another world, Tinker and Pony slipped out the side door into the darkness. The Oni warriors were too well trained to let the gate totally distract them. The four assigned to Tinker tore themselves away, and the one who spoke crude English said,
Where go you?
The other door. Tinker motioned with the spool of wire. See? Harmless. Build next door. He glanced back to the brightly lit workshop, where everyone waited for the vanished worker. Tinker didn't wait for him to decide, but headed slowly into the darkness. 20 days of playing construction demon goddess paid off. The guard followed without trying to stop her. She had made only one trip to the second site, early last week, learning its location under the disguise of having to sign off on the exact orientation of the gate. Tom-Tom had taken her at her word and placed it at the complete opposite end of the mile-long warehouse, where the garage had once been. They passed through the gazebo room and then through the kennel. The little dogs instantly launched into barking fits, but the warg merely eyed them as they passed. Oh gods, let this work. The second workshop was empty of Oni. The work crews had already left for the night. A handful of low-wattage bulbs threw pools of light down into the cave dark. Their footsteps echoed as they walked toward the gate. Wrapped in shadows, it loomed over them. Their insurance plan in ironwood. This part of the plan is nebulous, Tinker whispered to Pony in High Elvish, while pretending to examine work done. Without her slave driving, only the wood framing had been completed. table-sized and smaller spools of wire, like the one she carried, sat waiting for the wiring to begin. "Do you think you can kill our escort?"
"Yes, Domize,"
Pony said, paused, considered, and then asked,
"Now?"
"Yes." She stepped behind him to give him room to work. "Now." Pony took out the first two Oni before the guards even realized he was attacking. One moment he was standing with a pole in his right hand, and the next he was driving the pole through the eye of the Oni to the left with a motion that had his full body strength behind it. He shifted his grip and swung the pole back to the right, like a baseball player hitting a line drive. The pole hit the Oni's nose with a crack of shattering bone. The guard crumpled to the ground and lay still as death. The third Oni actually managed to dodge Pony's lightning swing as the fourth pulled out his sword. "Shit!" Tinker flung her spool of wire underhand, like a horseshoe, at the dodging Oni. The spool hit him mid-chest, knocking him off balance, and Pony's pole struck him hard. The Oni continued to move, though, while the last Oni charged Pony with his sword ready. "Get the sword, warrior Pony. I'll deal with that one." Yeah, right. But Pony was already engaging the last Oni, meaning she'd better act. She gave the two fighters a wide berth as she dashed toward the crawling Oni. She'd kicked a lot of people and punched and hit, but she never struck to kill. It had been so easy to tell Pony to do it. The Oni looked up, read her intent, and lunged at her. And she stopped being afraid to hurt him. She jerked backward, out of his reach, and swung at him as hard as she could. He threw up his arm, caught her pole, and, laughing, wrenched it out of her hands. Cursing, she stomped down on his foot. He backhanded her, and it was like being hit by a truck. The blow knocked her across the floor and up against the tanks of the acetylene torch. The taste of blood filled her mouth. Growling something in Oni, the guard flung against the wood pole and came after her.
That was another installment in Wynn Spencer's Tinker, and that's it for the podcast. Thanks as always to Audible.com and podcast theme composer Ruth Judkowitz. And good night, Tony Daniel, wherever you are. This is David F. Shirod coming to you from a soundproof bunker somewhere deep in the heart of Texas. Join us here next week in the hammering heart of science fiction and fantasy, and keep reaching for the stars.